Good afternoon, everyone. Today is the 27th of June. Hard to imagine, isn't it? And this is the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development. I want to thank the House members who had, I think, a full 12 minutes for lunch. And at least some of the House members and some of the Senate members also have meetings at 2 o'clock, so we're going to need to adjourn before the top of the hour. We have three items of business before us today. And I'm going to jump right in and open the work session on Senate Bill 256 relating to Willamette Falls navigation infrastructure.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 256 establishes a 23-member commission to advise state, local, and regional government agencies on the Willamette Falls locks. It previously had a public hearing on the 14th in the committee. You do have two recommended amendments on OLIS for you today to review. Both amendments appropriate $190,000 in general fund to the Higher Education Coordinating Commission, which is to be distributed to Oregon Solutions at Portland State University. And both amendments also provide whereas language related to the history of the Willamette Falls locks. The difference is that the 5 amendment includes through treaty language, which is on page 1, line 20 of the amendment.
Thank you very much. And so procedurally, we need to begin with the amendments.
If you'd like to do discussion first, or
If there's any general discussion on the measure before us.
Mr. Chair, ordinarily I would offer a motion, but I know what a huge supporter of this whole project to preserve this important piece of Oregon's history Senator Monroe is, and I am reminded that the underlying bill really is about the future of the locks and the opportunity to keep this true, tangible treasure of Oregon's history in place. So I'm going to defer to Senator Monroe.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Monroe, do you have a motion for us?
Yes, I would move adoption of the -4 amendment to Senate Bill 256.
Thank you, Senator. Colleagues, you've heard the motion, and the motion is for the -4. We have two options, either the -4 or the -5. My sense is that there is great support on this committee for the underlying project here, and some underlying concerns about language in the two different amendments before us and a decision of which way to proceed on that. So we have the motion to adopt the -4s. Is there any further conversation regarding the -4s? Then let me ask, is there objection to the -4s? I will be an objection. I see objections on the House side. I see no objections on the Senate side. A majority of both halves of the committee is required in order to adopt an amendment, so I would say that the motion fails. And I would ask if there is any other motions for us today.
Am I permitted to move the -5?
You are.
Mr. Chair, I move the -5 amendments to House Senate Bill 256.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Nierman has moved adoption of the -5 amendments to Senate Bill 256. Again, I will ask if there is any discussion. Yes, Senator.
The difference between the two is that it says in line 20, Grand Ronde Community of Oregon have historical claims through treaty to the Willamette Falls area. I have a question perhaps of staff. Was that treaty ever ratified by the U.S. government?
We need to phone a friend, or are you in a position to answer that question for us?
Mr. Chair, I could answer questions about the fiscal impact statement, but as far as through treaty, I would have
Sir,
to defer.
Anybody that's joined us today that may be in a position to answer the question as to whether or not the treaty referenced in the -5 amendments has been ratified? Thank you. If you'd come on up and introduce yourself for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Justin Martin, and I'm here today on behalf of the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde, where I'm also a tribal member. To Senator Monroe's question, yes, that is a ratified treaty of 1855.
Thank you very much for that clarification. Are there further questions? Yes, Senator.
Why then is the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation and the other nine treaty tribes, or eight or whatever, find that not to be true?
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, Senator Hansel, I do not know the answer to that. I do not know why they do not
agree
with that history.
May I call up Phil Donovan to answer the question?
Please.
Mr. Chair, within everybody's testimony, there is a map, a historical map, that does show the seven treaties with the Confederated Tribes of Grand Ronde and the tribes that were moved there, specifically the Clova Walla and the Kalapuya that were moved to the Grand Ronde Reservation that were treaty signers of that treaty. So we do not understand why Umatilla would not recognize that.
We're about to find out.
Welcome. Co-chairs, for the record, Phil Donovan, on behalf of the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla. We were okay with the dash four language. We accept that it is an accurate statement. In the vein of less is more, I'll just limit my comments to saying that the concern with the dash five language is the reference to treaty will be used as precedent in future efforts to introduce legislation providing Grand Ronde tribes with seeking co-manager status around Willamette Falls or the Columbia River. So that's why we were willing to live with the dash fours and why the dash fives leaves us opposed.
Very good. Thank you, Senator.
Mr. Donovan, is there anything that could be put in place that would be acceptable to both the Umatillas and the Grand Ronde that would state the future management? You said that the through treaty language would establish precedent that you would find unacceptable. Is there a I'm not quite sure that I understand your objection, that you don't want the two tribes to have a role in managing the locks should they be returned, or is it the falls? Is it the locks or the falls or the land, or what piece are you objecting to?
Madam Co-Chair, the concern is primarily over fishing and hunting rights and what's known as usual and accustomed areas. The Grand Ronde tribes do not have that reserved to them off reservation.
Thank you very much. So further discussion or questions? Yes, Senator.
Yeah, Mr. Donovan, do you know the Treaty of 1855? Was it in fact ratified?
I believe ratified, terminated, and then reestablished in
1983. Right. I was alive in 1983.
I thought you were going to claim you were alive at the first treaty.
I thought he was serving in the House that year. But
is this anecdotal, or are there documents that support the claim that you have just claims that you've just asserted, Mr. Donovan?
Madam Co-Chair, there has been interest by the Grand Ronds at several turns in the past 10 years that I've worked with the Umatilla tribes, expressing their interest in fishing rights. Most recently, they sought the ability to have a fishery at Willamette Falls. Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife said okay, much to the consternation of the Columbia River Treaty tribes. To which the solution was that those fish that are caught there at Willamette Falls are part of the state's allocation of U.S. versus Oregon. So as a quick reminder, U.S. versus Oregon established that 50% of the allowable catch of salmon are reserved to the treaty tribes and 50% to non-Indians. So in other words, the Grand Ronde portion of the catch comes from the non-Indian portion.
If you'll indulge me.
Please.
Let me just try to understand this. Have the Grand Rondes tried to become part of any of the Columbia River conversation and have been stopped from doing that?
I'm not enough of an expert to cite specific examples there, Co-Chair Johnson.
Mr. Chair, it looks as though Mr. Martin might have an opinion on this complex legal question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Madam Chair. I think quickly members of the committee need to understand the differences between the Nez Perce, the Umatilla, the Warm Springs, and the Yakima, who represent the Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission. None of those tribes were terminated in 1954 like the Grand Ronde tribe and five other tribes west of the Cascades here in Oregon. So we did not exist in the eyes of the federal government from 1954 until restoration of 1983. That's why issues like this are so important to us. You cannot just rewrite history because a tribe did not exist in the eyes of the federal government. We have on several occasions, Madam Co-Chair, asked to be members of CRTFIC, asked to be part of those discussions, most recently dealing with pinnipeds, and we've been turned down every single time. I will also remind the committee that the original bill that came out of a work group here today did not include those four Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission tribes. So we've gotten to a position where with the Dash Fives, we are allowing for our tribal friends and brothers and sisters to be at that table, to have those discussions, to go forward with the Willamette Locks project. We have acquiesced to that. The Dash Fives keep them at the table. We welcome their input. All we're saying here is the treaty from 1855, which was ratified, needs to be recognized by the state legislature. We cannot rewrite history without that language. So we ask you today to please support the Dash Fives.
And if I could, Mr.
Please.
Co-Chair, earlier this morning, appreciating the difficult position this puts you, my legal counsel drafted up a suggested additional whereas, and I shared that with the sponsor, and you know, we appreciate that you all are trying to conduct your business, get down and go home, and so I would just say to your earlier question, Co-Chair Johnson, you know, we could potentially come up with a Dash Six.
That just begs the question, would the Dash Six bring peace and harmony among us so we can proceed with this historic opportunity in Oregon City?
I hope so.
Mr. Martin, have you seen the Dash Sixes? I mean, the potential Dash Sixes?
No.
The committee hasn't either. I think we're at a terrible disadvantage here.
Madam Chair, we have not seen that, nor were we included on the Dash Fours.
I would, Madam Co-Chair, I was referring to there could be a Dash Six. There is not a Dash Six, for the record.
Mr. Chair, given that we have other business to do, could we, I'm just offering this as a suggestion, go off the record on this matter, let these guys take it out in the hall and see if we can find some agreement on the potential Dash Sixes. We do the rest of our business and they come back in and help bail this committee out of a hell of a problem.
Well, a fine suggestion, Senator. I think some of the committee members like to go out and watch, but that before I follow up on that suggestion, I see another a representative in the room. Representative, were you here to address this measure?
Nope. Just, nothing to say.
I just wanted to avail you of every opportunity, but thank you.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator.
I absolutely would appeal to you to accept your co-chair's recommendation. I believe this whole committee is strongly committed to this project, and this whole committee considered themselves to be friends of all of the nine tribes in the state of Oregon, and I really hate to see them battling with each other. These guys are friends. So let's accept this recommendation, send them out in the hall, and see if they can come back with something they can both agree on.
Right, a fine suggestion. And so what I'm going to do at this point is I'm going to close the work session on 256. I want to make sure, staff, that I'm using the right phrasing. If I close the work session, I can reopen that work session later today? Or am I just...
Can we take a recess for
Well, tell you what. So you're suggesting the correct phrase. I don't want to get into a problem where I accidentally close this bill out and it can't come back. So the proper phrase you're suggesting is a recess on 256. I'd like to continue into 978 and 3207. While we give people an opportunity to chat outside.
We might have to come back with different language besides recess, but I know we can take a recess for the moment.
Okay, I am going to recess. Are we all agree that that's the right word? I'm going to recess the work session on 256 with our intention to come back and talk about it later during our gathering today. And I believe that requires a gavel.
Yes.
And I'm going to excuse you two to go have a conversation, and I'm going to open a public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 978 relating to utilities.
Mr. Chair and members, Senate Bill 978 requires the PUC to study trends and developments in the electricity sector and to consider how those trends should inform the way that they regulate the industry. It requires the PUC to report its findings no later than September 15th, 2018. The measure will have a fiscal impact of $166,400 to fund a limited duration position at the PUC.
Thank you very much. Representative, were you here on 978?
3207.
As a courtesy to the representative, I'm going to suspend the work session on 978, and I'm going to open a work session on 3207. We'll come back to 978 in just a moment. So I'm opening a public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 3207. And if you'd introduce that one, and Representative, you're welcome to come forward.
Mr. Chair, members, House Bill 3207 names Interstate 5 between Albany and Salem the Atomic Veterans Memorial Highway. It prohibits the use of public funds. The bill is anticipated to have a minimal, if any, fiscal impact.
Thank you. Representative, I'm so glad you're with us today.
That was kind of fun to watch before. For the record, I'm Sherry Springer, State Representative from House District 17. Thank you for this opportunity to talk about this very important bill. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm really only here to answer any questions that you may have. I can certainly go through the history of this bill and how it's passed unanimously, if you would like. And I think it's probably one of those issues none of us are going to argue with. The reality is there has been some confusion, misunderstanding, some emails back and forth about the fiscal impact of this bill. And the language in this bill is consistent with every other bill related to signs regarding our armed forces along the freeway. So this is the same as all of the others. This had a fiscal impact at one point. But the language in the bill is really quite extraordinarily clear, believe it or not, that no state funds will be used to pay for this or the maintenance, and that these funds will come from the veterans group themselves, Atomic War Veterans. So certainly I encourage everybody to support this bill and move it on out of here. But if you want me to say anything further or answer questions, I'm more than happy to do that.
Co-chair.
I have a question that has been posed to me by constituents, the definition of atomic war veteran.
Right.
What all that encompasses are these workers that were, you can tell us.
Thank you for the question, Mr. Chair and Senator Johnson. I don't have the definition. Federal department has that. If you are an atomic war veteran, you know you are, or you can find out you are. It was until, I believe, 1996 that many of these veterans didn't know they were an atomic war veteran because they were told in the late 50s when the tests were going on, go stand by that building and don't let anybody go in. And they didn't know what they were guarding. Some of the examples are much more extreme. And it wasn't until a certain general, I believe it was, passed away in 96, that this became known. The Atomic War Veterans Group down around, well, the statewide group, but it's based out of Lebanon. Fred Schaefer is the chair, I believe, of that. And they have done an amazing job to help veterans identify that they are one of these atomic war veterans to access mostly medical benefits, but all of their benefits. Did I answer your question directly enough?
Sort of. For today's purposes, it's completely adequate. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions, colleagues? Co-Chair Johnson, might you have a motion for us?
I might have a motion. Mr. Co-Chair, I would move Senate Bill 32. Is that number right? It's a House bill.
That's correct. Sorry.
Sorry, House bill. I was working off the agenda, and it struck me that the number was wrong, and it is. It's House Bill 3207 to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you, Senator. Colleagues, you've heard the motion. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, are there objections to the motion?
This is purely a courtesy. At the end of session, we're putting through a lot of bills very rapidly, and I see ODOT sitting in the back of the room. We have been very clear on the record that there are to be no public funds, both for installation or for operations, but there's some reason that the second-in-command at ODOT has hustled over here, and could we respectfully hear from them?
Thank you, Senator.
Madam Chair, member of the committee, Paul Mather, Highway Division Administrator, just hustled over here just to make sure he didn't have questions. We're fine with the bill. Make sure there's not any issues. The only reason I hustled over here.
All right. Well, this was a two-body count from the ODOT camp, and I just wanted to make sure there was nothing we were missing. As a courtesy to ODOT.
We're good. Thank you.
Okay, cool.
And before you leave, this has been ratified. Is that correct?
Excuse me?
Never mind. Senator.
Do you have a better definition than we were given for what an atomic veteran is? Is it one who was in World War II when we dropped an atomic bomb, or what is it?
May I take that?
Please.
You want a better definition? I've got one for you. So it was between the years of 45 and 62 where a lot of testing was being done, and there were probably about 200,000 veterans exposed to some kind of atomic energy explosion somewhere in the process. So when I reference federal guidelines, they know exactly who they are. It isn't, well, that was me too kind of thing. It's very clear. But that is the primary, I'm hesitant to use the word definition, that's primary understanding. It's between 45 and 62.
And these were to some degree exposed to radiation during testing and so on.
Mr. Chair, I can certainly answer these questions. I love the opportunity to talk about this. I was trying to save your committee some time, but I'd love to talk about this a little bit. So there was a time in our history where we were doing a lot of testing with nuclear weapons. A lot of those tests were done on the Marshall Islands, and we've moved some bills that I've worked closely with through this building in about the last, I think, 6 years to acknowledge that. And we actually have a trust agreement with the islands now because of we decimated the ground. We absolutely decimated their ability to carve out an existence. That wasn't the only place. There were places in New Mexico and different places around here. And so there was a period of time when pigs were used in these tests. And they would put pigs, because pig flesh is the most similar at that time to human flesh. Yeah. And so they would have their medics on site, and they would do the test. And then they would triage and treat the pigs because of similarities of flesh, so they would know how to react. Several of my friends that are atomic veterans will tell of being given sunglasses, stand over there and guard. There'd be an explosion. They'd put their hands in front of their eyes to add more protection than sunglasses give. And they would see the bones in their hands because of the blast. And there are many, many cancers that have been directly associated with this. Okay. So that's really, I can give you even more if you want it. This was a secret for many, many years. You were not allowed to talk about this until I said, like, in 96. It's really kind of a disturbing time in our history. It really is.
Thank you. Yes, Senator.
Thank you, Sherry. I appreciate that. Having been an American history teacher for 30 years, of course, been alive during all that time, as old as I am, I appreciate your explanation. It's very helpful.
Thank you again. Any other questions, Representative Reardon? Do you have a question?
No, I just found some information, but Rep. Springer, not surprisingly, had all the answers. So
excellent.
Thank you for bringing this to us. This is great.
All right. Colleagues, the motion has been placed to already. Am I correct? The motion has been placed to move this to the full committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, the motion carries. And we need carriers. I'm going to ask if Representative Springer, would you like to take this to the House floor?
I think I can do that.
All right. And who would like to take it to Senate and to the committee? Senator Monroe will take care of that for us. All right. Thank you very much, everyone. I'm going to go ahead and close the hearing and work session on 3207. I'm going to return us to Senate Bill 978, which a few moments ago we received an overview. Do you want to hear the overview again, or should we? You want to hear the overview again? All right.
Mr. Chair and members of the subcommittee, Senate Bill 978. Requires the Public Utility Commission to study trends and developments in the electricity sector, and it directs the commission to explore changes to its existing regulatory framework that would support the developments in the industry. The PUC proposes to establish a one position to complete the work. There's a report that's required in September 15th, 2018. The bill has a fiscal impact of $166,400. And that's it.
Thank you very much. And this is a public hearing. I think, Mr. Gardner, did you sign up to talk to us about this?
Yes, Mr. Chair, my name is co-chair and members of the committee. My name is Jim Gardner, and I'm here today for NPSE, which is the Northwest and Intermountain Power Producers Coalition. NPSE is a group of primarily wind, solar, and some natural gas independent power producers that serve the Northwest and the Intermountain region. This bill owes its current form to Senator Beyer, former chair of the PUC, and I believe Senator Monroe was on the committee when the bill passed out unanimously from that committee. The rationale for the bill is that the electric power industry is undergoing tremendous rapid change right now in terms of new technology, new regulatory models, and new approaches to regulation. That's a phenomenon that's occurring all over the country. Senator Beyer established a sort of an informal work group to put together the language in this bill. It included the three investor-owned utilities, as well as NPSE, and was essentially shepherded by Mr. Eisdorfer, Jason Eisdorfer from the PUC, who is in the room today and who can shed some additional light on that process, on the objectives of the bill, if you wish. The bill does have a fiscal impact, but it is not a general fund impact. The funding would come from the PUC's gross operating fee, so there's no general fund impact. I think I'll pause there for sake of brevity.
Questions of the witness?
And Mr. Chair, Acting Chair, I think Mr. Eisdorfer is prepared to share some additional insights if that would be of desire to the committee.
Yes, please come on up.
Mr. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I am Jason Eisdorfer, Program Director of the Public Utility Commission. As Mr. Gardner said, this was a bill that came before the Senate Business and Transportation Committee. Senator Chair Beyer at the time requested that I have a conversation with Portland General Electric, Pacific Corp, and NIPSE to put together some basic language. Subsequently, I reached out to additional stakeholders relating to language. And the concept is very timely. There are significant drivers and changes in the electricity industry. I really count three, sort of reduce them down to three. One is significant changes in pace of technology. Second is significant changes in pace of certain public policies, frequently environmental policies. And then third is customer expectations. We've done a really good job over the last 100 years of training folks to turn on their lights and pay the bills, and increasingly customers want more than that, whether it's additional services behind the meter in their home, additional reliability, a different set of resources to serve them. And it's sort of increasingly difficult to hold together a model that is largely unchanged for about 100 years. So in our mind, this is something that my staff is thinking about all the time anyway. We are not officially taking a position on the bill, but we do not have a problem with it.
Thank you very much for that. Are there any questions? Representative Noble.
Thank you. I'm just curious if you mentioned PGE and Pacific Corps. Have, and since the amendment, are they on board with this, not on board with this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Noble, I believe so, but I think I'll have to let them answer for themselves. At least Pacific Corp is in the room.
I'm getting a thumbs up. I'll, is that answer adequate?
Yes. Thumbs up. It's a general universal.
Right. Any other questions? Representative Reardon.
So may I ask a couple of questions?
Please.
Thank you. Thank you, Co-Chair. So how large is the PUC budget?
Mr. Chair, Representative Reardon, I'm not sure I can answer that in terms of the entirety of the budget, because there are a number of elements beyond my staff. So I think I'll have to get back to you on the precise numbers.
I support the work. What I hope you can explain to me is, let me just kind of express my concern. So I understand PSC has dockets on all kinds of things, and you have analysts that do all kinds of research and wonderful work and help us keep the lights on in a cost-effective manner, and appreciate that. But what I don't understand is why for this particular activity there needs to be extra funding, even though I appreciate it's not from the general fund. It's still, you know, it comes from ratepayers event at some point.
Mr. Chair, Representative Reardon, that's a fair point. I would say that there's no guaranteed outcome of this particular investigation. I mean, people have asked me what's going to happen at the end of it, and it honestly, it could be as little as we're not going to change very much to we're going to change a lot. On the change in a lot side, it would be potentially a significant alteration of how the Public Utility Commission regulates investor-owned utilities. I would call it revolutionary rather than evolutionary, if that's where we end up. And so the work that goes into this, we thought that it would take a year and a half or 2 years to really investigate the entirety of it. Just as an example, there's a process in New York State, and it's taken 5 years to do this, and it's all consuming. So we don't want to go in that direction because we're Oregon and we're not New York. But the potential outcome, and I stress potential, is quite significant. And given that, I think we believe that we needed to invest in some additional resources.
Additional questions?
I can't think of a good way to phrase the question. It's just not a very satisfying answer to me. I think I understand what you're saying, but it's still with the vast resources that you have, it just seemed like this is just one extra little project, and so I don't know how we decide that we have to spend extra tons of money for something that, as you said, has an unknown output. So if it's unknown output, we don't know how long it's going to be. Maybe it would help to understand how you even made an estimate of to request any money.
Mr. Chair, Representative Reardon, I will say I've been either appearing in front of or a member of the Public Utility Commission for 20 years, and I think it's fair to say, with all honesty, that the workload at the commission has never been higher. My staff is pushed to the edge right now, and part of it is because there are so many dynamics going on and there are so many requests of the commission and changes because of changes in the industry. And so the theory behind this is to start looking at this holistically rather than one docket at a time. And so it's on the one hand, we're being asked to do a lot. On the other hand, this has the potential of making things a little bit more clear, not just to the regulator, but to the utilities and the public in general. So this is actually an attempt, I hope, to move the ball forward. We're pretty stretched as it is, but there's a hope that this actually begins to make sense of the current drivers that are going on.
Well, I think the work needs to be done. We've worked together in the past, and I have a lot of faith in your judgment, so I will support this. It just seems a little strange to me to define this as a particular project, so with that.
Thank you. Were there other questions? I don't see any other questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Was there anybody else here who did not sign up that wanted to offer some comments on 978? I am not seeing any. So, Co-Chair Johnson.
I would move Senate Bill 978 to the full
committee. Only a work session?
Oh.
Yes, well, I did open a work session at the beginning.
Oh, we should hear from LFO first.
Excuse me,
before
I'm sorry.
Is
there a recommendation before we vote?
Mr. Chair and members and to Representative Reardon, the LFO is recommending establishing this position as a limited duration position, so it would go away at the end of the 17-19 biennium. And with that, I'll just offer the LFO recommends adoption of the -4 amendment.
Now, Mr. Co-Chair.
Please.
Forgive me, Mr. Jolivet, for not deferring to you earlier. Mr. Co-Chair, I would move Senate Bill 978 with the -4s to the full.
We need to adopt the -4 okay. Before you can move.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. I was outside negotiating. I got to get my head back in the game. Mr. Chair, I would move the -4 amendments to Senate Bill 978.
Thank you very much, Co-Chair. Colleagues, you've heard the motion. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Then we will adapt the -4s.
Mr. Co-Chair.
Yes.
I would move the amended by the -4s Senate Bill 978 to the full committee on Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
And thank you for that motion. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, motion carries, and we need carriers to full and floor.
I'll do it.
All right. Senator Johnson will take it to full and to the Senate, and I will take it to...
I will, if you want.
Representative Reardon will take this to the House floor. And that being the case, I will close the hearing and work session on 978. I would ask if someone would move to suspend the rules for the purposes of reopening 3207 so that Senator Johnson can vote on that motion.
Mr. Chair, I move to reopen the rules to allow Senator Johnson to vote on
3207.
House Bill 3207.
All right, thank you for your courtesy, Mr. Chair.
Is there any objection? Seeing none. Senator Johnson, would you like to vote on 3207?
Johnson votes aye.
All right. Let the record reflect Senator Johnson votes aye. Now, let's return to 256. And when last we met,
Mr. Chair,
we had the -5s, which had been moved, and we were in the discussion at that stage. Do we need to rescind that motion?
Mr. Chair, I would withdraw my motion to move the -5s.
Was it Senator Johnson who moved the dash fives?
Yeah, you moved the dash fours.
Oh, I moved the dash fours.
She didn't move any of them.
It was Representative.
Representative Nierman moved the dash fives, and so I'd like to invite him, if he so chooses, to rescind that motion.
Sure, Mr. Chair, I move to rescind the, or I rescind my motion to
All
move
right.
the dash fives.
Thank you. So we are back to consideration of of 256 without any amendments. Senator Johnson, what have you heard of late?
I bring news. conceptual language has been agreed to out in the hall. It is in the process of being drafted. We have permission of the sponsor of the bill and also an important member of Ways and Means to move this over until tomorrow, when the committee will have the opportunity to see the newly agreed upon conceptual dash sixes. Whoops, we got incoming.
Let's stand at ease for just a moment to see what we are back on the record. Colleagues, we were talking about 256. I think we've rolled it up and down the hall long enough that we've worn the rough edges off. Senator Johnson.
I want to make sure that we have the proper nomenclature, and so I'm turning to the professional staff to set this over until tomorrow for consideration of the conceptual dash sixes.
We all agree on that?
Mm-hmm.
All right. I don't believe that requires a motion. It just simply requires that I close the work session on 256 with the intent to hold this over until tomorrow, where it'll be the first item of business, and we anticipate hearing the dash six amendments at that time.
And I would just share with the audience and the committee and people that might be listening that the two representatives have just shaken hands out in the hall. I have reason for optimism, and so that's what I know.
Thank you, Senator. I'm gonna close and hold over the work session on 256 until tomorrow. And I'm going to say to anybody watching that that I apologize that this seemed a little bit scattered today. It's that time of session, most certainly, and there are time constraints that make it more difficult to do these things more smoothly. Plus, we have short time frames in which we're allowed to manage them. So I think actually, in spite of it seeming disorganized, we're going to come to a very positive consensus on this situation. So, colleagues, is there anything else for the good of the order before I adjourn today's business? If not, I will see you all here tomorrow, and we are adjourned.
I thought it was interesting.